right, so we're going to get into, there's your Purim Shiel. We're going to get into, you have weeks to add to it, don't worry. We're in Hilchos Deos, and we're starting the fifth chapter, Perek Hei, okay? All right? So, the Rambam here is now, I mean, one of the things that you really start to appreciate when you learn more Rambam is not just the content, but the way he organizes things. And how he's, and this is why, even though I was like joking, why when you've done Hilchos Deos, if you go back and do it again, you appreciate it on a whole different level. Because when you're reading Perek Aleph, right, the first chapter, and you appreciate where he's going, you realize how he's setting up a structure. And this halacha is a great example, okay? K'shem she'achacham nikar b'chachmato uvedeotav. What do you notice, by the way, right away? What's the word he's using here? Right? I think that as you, one of the things you develop when you learn, right? When you learn Torah, when you learn more Torah, is sensitivity. Right? You start to pick up nuances that you just wouldn't get. Like you have two individuals, one of them has been here for 6 months, and one of them just walked in today, and we're both reading this halacha, and we're seeing totally different things, right? Yeah. By the way, you'll see something else, but I won't even point it out because you're going to notice it. You don't know?
No,
what do you mean?
No.
He has to disagree. Right. That's your job. Okay.
No, really.
You know what they say?
If we just started with this, there would be no difference in people's understanding.
What do you mean there'd be no difference? You'd be missing four chapters worth.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's do the halacha, then you tell me what you think. Is that it? Okay. And it's normal to wear a short sleeve shirt on a hailstorm day. Okay. Kishem she'achacham nikar b'chachmato. Okay. Halacha aleph. Just like the chacham is known in his wisdom and his midot. Right? And he is set apart from them, from the rest of the people. Now, I want you to understand something. In Perek Aleph, in the first chapter, when we talked about Chochmah, excuse me, as being moderation and balance, and it's clear that the Rambam views that as something that's accessible to everybody. Anybody can practice Chochmah. Anybody can attempt to grow in Chochmah. There is nonetheless the idea that within any community there are the Chachamim, right? Rabuteinu Zichronan Levracha, right? And you see this all through Torah verbiage, right? V'chachameinu Zichronan Levracha, V'chen Amru Chachamim, Chachamim Omrim, right? This is a lot. And the Rambam, this is actually the first instance where the Rambam starts to talk about how we define that person that is by definition set apart somewhat from the Jewish people, from the crowd, let's say, right? And it's fascinating to me that we haven't gotten to Hilchos Talmud Torah yet. In other words, you would think that if I walk into a room and I see that I'm sitting down at a table in the Beis Medrash and someone walks in, and everybody stands, you would assume, naturally, like if you go into Yeshivat HaKotel, everybody's sitting down, and somebody walks into the room, right? And everybody stands. So you'd assume that's a Rebbe, Rosh Hashiva, whatever, and you would assume what about them, most probably, especially if we hadn't been studying Hilchos Deos, you would assume that they know a lot of Torah. But that's not where the Rambam starts. And it's a sad commentary, and we could debate where this comes from, right? That we don't assume that person is a person of sterling character. Or at least in the world, there are enough people who don't assume that. And that saddens me. The Rambam, on the other hand, makes it very clear. That's where you start. Right? He takes it as a given that a person's ethics, right, follow along with his wisdom. If a person's wisdom sets him apart, but his ethical behavior doesn't, then he's not a chacham. Right? There's something missing. Okay? And by the way, when you talk about in Pirkei Avot, you know, when we finish this year, and all of you will, you know, head off to whatever you do next year, you know, there might be a couple of you not doing, you know, Shana Bet, and you know, you might end up in whatever circumstances, universities, wherever you end up. So, you know, one of the questions that becomes a natural topic towards the end of May is, you know, how do you take this with you? And there are a lot of different pieces to that. One of them is definitely Aseh Lecha Rav, right? To find someone in your life that can be that Rav, Rebbe, Chacham, right? And it's actually not so difficult to find a person that you can connect to who has a tremendous amount of Torah. What becomes very difficult is to find someone you connect to who you believe is of sterling character. That's very hard to find. Right? If you want to know one of the reasons why I at least try to remain connected to Rav Amital, Rav Ruchtenstein, to Rav Nevenzahl, is because those are individuals that I have found to be of such sterling character that I feel like I become the better just for being around them. Okay? So now the Rambam is going to get into this. Okay? Kishem she'achacham nikar b'chachmato uvedeotav. You know, let me ask you a question. Right? This whole pursuit, what's the goal?
Torah.
Torah is the goal? You think so? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, define that then.
To be self-aware. No. to take the middle path, be, you know, balanced individual with mitos and actions and deeds and know the truth.
To find purpose.
Yeah, what purpose of what?
Well, in other words, if Mikey is correct, if the goal is to find balance in your midot, well, then the question naturally becomes, why? Like, why is that a goal? That, I don't know. Is that the goal? Or is it just a vehicle? Is that the purpose, to be balanced? Why do you need to be balanced, yeah?
Well, to develop a loving relationship with all people.
With all people, but... Okay, I'm gonna get annoying here, and I apologize in advance. Pardon?
Does that make you, like, enjoy other people and enjoy life? Or the more
well, so then you're saying the goal is to enjoy life. You think the goal is to enjoy life? Really? Let's think about this for a minute. If the goal is to enjoy life, that's the goal.
No. But do you mean to enjoy life or to be happy?
To be happy. Yeah. To be happy means to have a purpose.
Can we all define our terms? Please.
Okay, yeah.
I think the goal of this is sort of by us becoming balanced. Like Mikey says, it sort of brings a new balance to the world and sort of makes the world a better place. Because, like, we do it, then we'll pass it on to other people. And
well, I don't really care about the world. I mostly care about myself.
Well, that's but certainly not the goal.
But that's not what I think the goal is. Like that's why I differ from you. No, I said just part of it.
Okay, and then taking one step further.
You care, really?
Well,
you're right, though.
Really, I can't believe you just said that, Mike. You
know, let's think about this for a minute. No, that's honest, if it's honest, right? That's an interesting question. By the way, just for the record, I have not yet found what I'm looking for, because I think all the things you're talking about, including living a life of purpose, which is as close as we've gotten here, right, is still the vehicle. It's not the goal. What's the goal? Like, why do you need to live a life of purpose? So there's two interesting questions there. One question is, if the goal is to bring happiness into the world, make everybody happy, etc. So suppose you're living an experience where there is no happiness, where you don't get the happiness, and you really feel that you will not be able to succeed in finding happiness in that experience. You won't. Doesn't matter whether you're right, you're wrong, whatever. Then that would mean there's no more point to life.
Well, then you're beyond the balance, and you can't find happiness.
Right. Pardon?
If you can't find happiness in any situation, you haven't done the prerequisite, which we say is finding balance.
Okay. I think balance itself is a vehicle, but we're close.
Yeah, I think balance is the starting point, and from there you can go into a specific.
But why do we need to be in balance? So we're not in balance.
Then you won't have any of those things that you want to have. If you're not in balance, you're
which
not
are a happy life full of purpose, but why have a happy life full of purpose? Guy wakes up one morning, he says, you know what? I've been here for 6 months, and everybody keeps telling me we have to have a happy life and happy. You know what? I don't want a life full of purpose, and I don't care if we don't have a life full of purpose. I don't know why bother having a life full of purpose. You don't have a life full of purpose. Like, what's missing?
I don't think you can
vote. I mean, either there's.
Well, that's what Daniel was saying before. You know, if you look If you look at the beginning of Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, if you look, I mean, the reason that we chose to study Hilchot Deot, right, is because my assumption is that in the classes of the Re'aron, you're basically covering the ground of Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah. But the Rambam starts with Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah. And if you look, and by the way, I mean, that's probably one of the more difficult sort of pieces of halacha in the Rambam, because it gets to very, very deep stuff. Boker Tov. It gets to very deep stuff. But the Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, for example, in halacha, in the first perek, in the first chapter in halacha Gimel and Dalet, talks about the Rambam calls HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ואם יעלה על הדעת שאין כל הנמצאים מלבד, מלבדו, well, no, this isn't what we need. לפיכך אין אמיתתו כאמיתת אחד מהם. הוא שהנביא אומר, והשם אלוהים אמת. והוא לבדו האמת, ואין לאחר אמת כאמיתתו. The Rambam, right at the beginning of everything, basically says that one of the principles, right, the first three, maybe four halachot of the Rambam, are basically a synopsis of the first principle of faith. Right, the Rambam has Yud Gimel Ikarim, 13 principles of faith, that he lays out in his Hakdama, in his introduction to Perek Chelek, to the 10th Perek in Sanhedrin, which we at least mentioned in passing a couple of times. Excuse me. And this is part of that first principle of faith, that Hashem is independent. That Hashem is true, right? And there's nothing dependent on Hashem, right? Unlike everything else that to some degree is dependent. And by the way, as an aside, the definition of truth, if you think about it, is that it's independent. In other words, you know, let's say everybody in the world thinks that the world is flat. But the world is really round, right? So the world doesn't become flat just because everybody thinks it's flat. The world is, one second, I'm waiting for you, I know, hang on. The world, one second, and I'm waiting for you. Hang on. The world is round, but everybody thinks it's flat, right?
And then it's flat.
Pardon?
No, it's
really round. Physically, it's round. In your mind, it might be flat. But if you had a super, if somebody sent you back an airplane, right, so that you could test it out, you would discover that you were wrong because the world is round. Now, but that truth, one second, that truth, okay, which is the definition of truth, that it's independent, is still not as independent as Hashem is independent. Because, for example, if some physical contortion stemming from a black hole actually caused, I don't know, meteors to hit the earth and flatten it, it could become flat, theoretically, right? Whereas Hashem, the truth of Hashem, whatever that is, cannot be changed. That's at least how we understand Hashem, which is to say we don't really understand Hashem, right? So why do I mention all this here? Because all of this, right, stems from that same reality. In other words, if you look back, how did we start studying Hilchot Deot? Where did we start with? Do you remember?
Something about balance.
Before balance.
Before balance?
Yep. See if you remember. Look at the first page. What did we start with? Before truth. A technical thing that we did, which I would do anytime I start a set of halachas in the Rambam. We looked at the koteret, we looked at the title, right? And we said, the Rambam says, right, that there are 10 mitzvot. The first one is, Yesodei HaTorah, sorry. The Rambam says that there are 11 mitzvot, right? And the first one is lehidamot bidrachav, right? To mimic Hashem ways, right? In fact, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot, just to remind you, and you can always find this, it's one of the values of having a two-volume Rambam, because the beginning of the two-volume Rambam is the at least minyan mitzvah, the list of mitzvot. So the Rambam in mitzvah chet, the eighth positive mitzvah, says, what's the mitzvah? Lehidamot bidrachav. Hatovim vayisharim sheneemar ve'alachta bidrachav. There's a pasuk that says, and you shall walk in Hashem's ways, right? Hitalech lefanai ve'yeh tamim, walk before me and become tamim, I'm not going to get into what that is, right? Perek Hey, up until now, everything has just been setting the groundwork for Perek Hey, for the fifth Perek, which is this mitzvah. This halacha is the mitzvah of lidamot bedrachav. It's the beginning of understanding what that means. Like, how do you mimic Hashem's ways? All of ethics, all of human ethics, has no independent truth if it doesn't stem from an independent truth. And therefore, if I don't start with Hilchot Yesod HaTorah, if I don't begin with the fact that the reason to be ethical, the reason to want to find moderation, the reason that moderation includes finding purpose, and the reason that the essence of purpose is connecting to Hashem, that's the source of my purpose, all that is because ultimately these ethical values are subjective unless there's an objective source. Now, I just want to remind you, this proves absolutely nothing. It's about understanding how the Jewish system works. Yeah, you want to say something?
Why do you think truth is important?
Why do I think truth is important?
Yes.
Well, if truth is connecting to Hashem, right, it's basically the reason we're here.
But let's say, you gave me a glass of Bob as a present, yeah? And I took it back to the dorms, and Daniel threw it out the window.
Right.
It was broken. And then the next day you asked me how your vase was. You're not going to... It just has me some, you know? If I say, oh, it's broken into a million pieces on the middle of the Rova, that's going to hurt somewhat if it's like an expensive vase you bought for me. And you're not going to... If I say it's, oh, it's really good, the flowers in it.
Okay.
I'm not telling the truth. You're missing out on the truth. Why do you think that's important?
Okay, well, one second. We have to redefine the concept of truth. This is going to annoy you. I'm warning you. This is going to annoy you.
Oh, no.
We have to redefine the essence of truth. If
he's just getting you back, Moshe.
Truth in terms of facts that are correct is not ultimate truth. Right? Ultimate truth, and these are all just words, that they're semantics. The idea is what's important here. I don't know what you really call it, right? Because I'm used to Hebrew terms. English terms are more difficult because they're commentary, they're translation. But truth in terms of facts, right, is, was this food good, right? So we're all sitting around the table and somebody cooked, you know, a woman who's a nebuch, a widow, and she's trying to get a job here, and you happen to know her from the Rova, and she's been through a tough life, and she comes here, and we decide to take a risk and hire her as a cook. And the first day she comes here, she cooks lunch, and it's horrendous. It's horrendous, like everybody agrees it's horrendous. So therefore, on a certain level, maybe it's still subjective, but from the Western society, yeshiva, a student, we'll call that as close to objective as you can get, right? It's horrendous. But then she says, how was the food? And you know that if you tell her that it's horrendous, that she won't have work tomorrow. And so without even talking about this, you collectively decide that you're going to tell her it was great, right? Because you don't want to hurt her feelings, you don't want to lose her job, even if eventually she'll lose her job, right? So on a factual level, you've said something that's false. On a deeper level, you've recognized that the purpose of how we present facts is bigger than whether I'm telling the truth about the food. Because the true truth is why was this put into my life? And who is this person? And are they created in the image of Shem? And what does Hashem really want of me? Right? If that's where truth emanates from, then the truth in that moment is not to say the facts as they are. So for example, if you were to say to me, the vase lies broken on the street, and I was really connected to truth, then I would understand that Hashem wanted that vase to be broken on the street. And that would be okay. It wouldn't hurt me at all. I would just wonder why you needed to have a vase for a day that got broken in the street. In fact, if you think about it, if I could get angry, let's say, we mentioned that anger stems from arrogance, and arrogance stems from, like, they're connected, and they come about sort of the ego, because true anger comes from the fact that I think it's about me.
Is it possible?
Oh, one second, that I think it's about me, right? If I really knew that it was from Hashem, then I wouldn't get angry. And that's a whole different level of truth, and that's what we're getting to here. Yeah.
Is it possible that anger is just, like, your nature? Like, and there are a lot of people just naturally angry. It's not like because they think they're better than people. Like, how could you do this to me necessarily, but more because that's just the way his father was, his grandfather was.
I agree with you that we are all created with different temperaments. And we have different nitiyot. What's a nitiya in English? Tendencies. Pardon?
No.
Tendencies, right? And some people have an easier time dealing with anger, and some people have a harder time dealing with anger. But I also believe that it's absolutely possible for every person to conquer their anger. Every person. You can work. One person's conquering their anger is another person's not even need to work on it. But every person can conquer their anger. That's what I think. And I'm sure that you don't know until you work on it. Right? Yeah?
To give an example, my dad's cousin, his father used to always yell. And like my family has like a solid amount of anger in it. But he saw like all the things all the time. He swore when he was 10 years old that he would never yell at anyone and that he would never yell at his kids ever. And so far as we know up to this day, he's still done that and kept true to that promise. Just because like he tries so hard to control that.
Right, it's a question of how much work it is. By the way, I'll tell you something interesting, which is really valuable to realize. Something like that, that for a certain type of person is really hard to work on it, as they work on it, it gets easier. That's a cloud in life.
But my problem is not that you're showing your anger. That, of course, you can conquer.
No, you can change what you feel.
Actually feeling anger. That's what
we're going to get into that. That's going to be Perek Vav. The sixth chapter, we're going to get into this topic.
Like, not yelling at somebody, that's a great accomplishment.
No. But you can change.
Like, you don't know if he's really angry inside.
No. You can change what you feel inside. We're going to get, that's the sixth chapter. When we get through the fifth chapter, then we'll be ready for the sixth chapter.
Okay.
It is. It's a fascinating process. Yeah.
What difference does it make? Much human part of it. What difference does it make if the world, like, do you agree that it's possible that the world came into existence 10 minutes ago and we were all brought into existence having memories, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Just now the world has started, and like, oh yeah, I remember these things happening, but you're just born remembering them, and there's no such thing as Hashem, like, it's not all, like, this was just some...
The difference would be ultimate purpose. That would be the difference.
I don't think there'd be any difference.
Pardon?
I don't think there'd be any difference as far as we're concerned. If we didn't know that...
No. If what Michael is saying is not just that, it doesn't matter whether we know that, but if we think that, and we're programmed by aliens... But those aliens are not creators. Like, who created the aliens? If you buy into that Hashem created everything and Hashem created aliens to do that for us, then there would be no difference. What's the difference? Right? I mean, unless you say that it makes a difference in the Torah, then for a Jew it would make a difference. Or for a Muslim if it made a difference in the Quran. Right? For me, if what you're saying would have to negate Torah, in other words, Sinai never happened and all this is... Well, then yeah, then it would make a huge difference. Right? But if it didn't make a difference, if it was just that aliens created and gave that to me, and that Hashem gave me the Torah, but He gave it to me in a way so that I would think one thing when it's really another, that wouldn't make a difference at all.
I think Rabbi Aaron may disagree with you on the first point.
Yeah, could be.
I think he said that if he found out it was all untrue, he'd still live the same lifestyle.
No, now you're having a different discussion. Now you're talking about the type of person, I wasn't there when Rabbi Aaron said this, but I know we see eye to eye on this topic. Now you're talking about the person who lives life as a Jew, not because he accepts the Torah as true, but because he sees the impact of a Torah lifestyle, and he says, you know what, I'm not ready to agree or to accept that Hashem runs the world, whatever, but this is the best system I've seen. So looking at whether, like, I'm not convinced that if you run every day you're going to live longer. But I'm convinced that people who run every day seem to live healthier lives. So I'll take the risk and I'll run that, I'll do that in my life because it seems to be a better life. I've met lots of people who start out that way. And they say, look, I don't keep Shabbos because I'm convinced that Hashem gave us the Torah and Hashem said Zechor Yom Shabbat. I'm convinced that every family that I seem to meet that has Shabbat in their lives has a healthier life. So I want that in my life. So I'm going to keep Shabbat so I can marry a girl who also keeps Shabbat because then I'll have that in my life.
Is that bad?
Pardon? No, that's not bad. I think, pardon? Pardon? Is it good? It's good. The question is it good enough? It's not good enough for me. It might be good enough for them. See, the difference between that and where I'm at, and that's just where I'm at today. Maybe tomorrow I find out the whole thing is a lie. I don't know, right? But that'd be cool, yeah?
But what would you do if you found out tomorrow the whole thing is a lie?
Then I'd stop doing it.
Really?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Tamei Mitzvot don't...
Tamei Mitzvot stem from the fact that I believe Hashem gives this to me as a purpose.
Yeah, the Tamei Mitzvot... You still believe that Shabbos is healthy for your family.
Yeah, but I could easily find something else that's healthier for my family. Listen, I happen to think, last night, Mayan and I have been talking about this for a while, right? And, you know, since you went to the army. So she finished her course, and she's doing chafifa, and she's out in this base, whatever, near Tel Aviv somewhere. And we always said, you know, when you're in your normal routine, so it'd be great, I'll drive out, and we'll get together, we'll go to a movie, go wherever, right? So it's taken us about 6 months, because she was in a course, and she couldn't do it. So we did it last night. And, I had a great time, and I got to connect with my daughter, and I got to bond. Now imagine she's on base for Shabbat. And I decide this particular Shabbat, instead of staying home, we'll all get in the car Saturday morning, and we'll drive out, and we'll pick her up, we'll have a picnic, and we'll bond. And we'll have a great experience, and we'll get to know each other better, and we'll talk, and it'll be great. And everybody will go home and think that was great. Why don't I do that? Because I think that there's a deeper truth and a higher truth. And I think that the system that Hashem gives me is worth sticking to because I believe it comes from Hashem. But if I didn't believe it came from Hashem, if I just thought that it was sort of a healthy, a nice lifestyle, I don't know that I would be committed consistently to stick with it. And I'll tell you something else that's interesting. I just hope nobody misinterprets this as judgment, chas v'shalom. Everybody's in their space and their place, and we all have to find our paths and struggle with where we're at and whatever. One of the things that I've noticed, especially in the modern Orthodox world, I don't know why this is. I think it's, I don't like the labels, but for purpose, this is what I seem to find. I think that it's very hard. Balance is very hard. It's very easy to be in an extreme. It's very hard to be in the middle, right? And sometimes what you find is that, people get confused because they're seeing confusing messages. So you have a family that says it believes that Shabbat is valuable, and they won't go out and party Friday night in a disco. But they'll have a Shabbat dinner, and they'll go upstairs and, I don't know, watch some TV, do a little laptop, but you know, whatever, they think the kids don't notice, etc. If it's not, it's like having a marriage and having an affair once in a while. Like, suppose nobody finds out. Suppose really nobody finds out. If you don't believe Hashem exists, and if you were absolutely convinced, like, the only reason not to have an affair then is because you think your wife is going to find out, and you've decided you want to keep that relationship. But if you don't have Hashem in your, if you have Hashem in your life, that's not why you don't have an affair. You don't have the fear because it's wrong, because Hashem tells you there's something, because the essence and the definition of a relationship is that you're missing something, right? And people do that,
it's
and it confuses things.
That people don't have an affair because they love their wife and they are loyal to them.
You have to understand. That's the easy way. And that's what I have. Like you work at a relationship and you fill it with such love that you couldn't. Look, Hashem only knows what the future holds, but I can't imagine you could ever walk down the street and see someone else and imagine that you could have any kind of relationship with them that would compare to the relationship you have with your wife. But not everybody has that relationship. So let's say that you're married and you're not happy. Let's say your wife isn't happy. Chas v'shalom. And she meets some guy and she's lonely, but she would never leave the relationship because she wouldn't do that to the children and because the person she's married to is a good guy. She doesn't want to hurt him, but she's unfulfilled. So she meets some guy and he's in a marriage and he's unhappy. And he won't leave his wife because he's a good person. He doesn't want to hurt his children. Doesn't want to hurt his wife. She didn't do anything wrong. And they find each other. And in finding each other, they find some level of fulfillment. So what's the reason not to have an affair if you think nobody's ever going to find out? So if you believe that Hashem created the world and Hashem gave you Torah and that there's a higher objective truth, and then that's what guides you. Then you give meaning to that. I mean, that's what we've been saying all along in Mitzvot. I believe that these things have deep meaning. And I've spent a lot of time, and I'll continue to spend a lot of time giving meaning to the mitzvot. But at the end of the day, the reason that I do the mitzvot is because I believe they come to me from Hashem. Everything starts from that truism. At the end of the day, if a person doesn't succeed at a certain point, and you can struggle with that, look, what's the mitzvah of mitzvah gdola ad ma'od leida shiyei Hashem Elah? What's the mitzvah to know that Hashem exists? So the Abarbanel has a sefer called the Rosh HaManah, which is a commentary on the Rambam's 13 principles of faith in his Akdam al-Perek Chelek. And this is one of his first questions. He says, just like Rav Elchanan Wasserman that we once talked about, how can you be obligated to believe in Hashem? So he says, no, it's not that it's an obligation to believe in Hashem. It's that if a person doesn't create a relationship with Hashem in their life, then nothing else, right, ultimately has lasting meaning. Fulfilling a life of Torah, if you don't believe Hashem gave you the Torah, is a risk. It's a randomness. Because at the end of the day, if Hashem doesn't exist, it's random. But that brings us back to this halacha. Yeah.
What would it take for you to lose your faith that Hashem exists?
What would it take? So such a pessimistic question.
Find out tomorrow that it's not true. What would have to happen?
Yeah, what would it mean that it wasn't true?
I can't imagine. That's why I'm.
And you said if I find out tomorrow that it's not true, I would stop.
I think once you. That's a good example of why the Rambam starts with the fact that the independent truth of Hashem is different from any other independent truth. Because once you make that connection to Hashem, once you know Hashem in your life, you can't imagine how anything could come along and invalidate that truth. I'm not saying it's not possible because I'm a human being. So who am I to say it's not possible? But I can't imagine that. In other words, I would go so far as to say, you know, it's like when I meet a person who doesn't love learning Gemara. Okay? So I love learning Gemara. And I can't imagine how somebody wouldn't love that type of learning. So maybe in my subconscious, I just think to myself, well, this person doesn't love learning Gemara because the Gemara that they think they're not loving is not really what Gemara is. Whether I'm successful in communicating what Gemara is another question. Same thing with Shabbat. So if you would know the reality of Hashem as I know it, you wouldn't be able not to have that in your life. But that's a very arrogant way of looking at the world, and that's why I don't spend a lot of time, you know, communicating that. But maybe that's at the root of it. But I can't imagine. It's a good question. I can't imagine. Maybe I can't imagine because I just haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it. It's like going through marriage and asking yourself, what could your wife do to completely invalidate the marriage? Well, that's actually not a good example because you can get a get. What could your children do to make themselves not your children anymore? I don't think they could. I think a child is your child no matter what they do. And it affects the relationship. But at the end of the day, your child will always be your child. You brought them into the world. You experienced what you experienced with them. They can't undo that. Yeah.
Like, if Hashem is what he says it is, it's independent truth, then he wouldn't be, if he then came down and said this isn't the truth, he wouldn't be Hashem anymore, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, that's trying to understand Hashem logically. That's a variation of putting Hashem in the box.
Down, like, if he knew it was prophecy.
Could God disprove God? It's the same thing as can God create a rock he can't lift? Right? I suppose so, but
Muhammad
then you would still know God,
down
right?
On his flying donkey.
Pardon?
When Muhammad writes down his flying donkey and says that the Torah is old and we need all follow the Quran.
Oh, there's actually a pasuk that actually suggests that in that instance you don't believe him. It's in Dvarim Perek Gimel. You can look it up. Ki yakum b'kir b'cha navi o cholem chalom. If a prophet arises and says, "Bring me a chumash dvarim," I'll read you the pasuk, and says, you know, a sign will come. And this sign comes true, right? I think it's in Dvarim Perek Gimel. One second.
Is Muhammad riding in on his flying donkey?
Parshat Rei. V'chi yavo Muhammad. One second.
Seems kind of stubborn.
Ki yakum b'kir b'chana. This is a very important parak to know. Ki yakum b'kir, it's Perek Gimel Pasuk Bet. Okay? 13 verse 2 in Dvarim, Pashrei. Chalom. If a false prophet arises, and he gives you a sign, and that sign, that miracle comes true. He says to you, listen, I'm a prophet, the sun is going to stand still, and it's going to do a dance for you. And it does. Uva ha'otva mofet. And then he says, now that you see that sign, Lemor, what is that meant to say? Let's go. That means that I'm a prophet, and I'm telling you that we should follow false gods. Do a avodah zarah with me. Right? Idolatry. Lo tishma el divrei anaviyahu. Don't listen to that prophet. O el chole machalomahu. Ki minase Hashem elokechem etchem. Right? Because Hashem is testing you. Now, testing, right, exactly. Testing, now, if this is a bunch of guys who made up the Torah over 1,000 years, you know, J and J1, it's great, it's very clever. Then they're just brilliant guys. They created the built-in answer to that question, right? If it's Hashem, so that's a fascinating question. Why would Hashem allow for the concept of a Navi Sheker? How could Islam exist? So that's a much deeper question, which is worth pursuing, right? Tonight's Thursday, we can do a Q&A. Right? But on a certain level, we gain from struggling with that question. Right? Thank you, sorry. Right? So that's the answer to that question is there, yeah?
You brought the example before you were saying, so what if someone says, I don't care about happiness, I don't care about my purpose, I don't care about truth. Then what's, you know, what does that person...
Right, well, so generally speaking, You know, you had this in the Holocaust. I remember once there was a mashakitash. There was a, like a, whatever, a woman who was a girl who was a soldier with a certain role in our unit. And we were in sergeant's course. And we got into this deep discussion. It was Friday night. And we were a bunch of guys sitting around, and she was sitting with us. And somehow this topic came up. Shabbat, why do you keep Shabbat? Like, you know, and she genuinely wanted to know. So we got into this whole discussion. And I wasn't wearing my rabbi's hat. I wasn't even an officer. I was just studying to be a sergeant. But we got into the discussion. So I said, well, what do you think the purpose of living life is? Like, what's the purpose? So she said, to have a good time. I said, really? She said, yeah. She said, that's the purpose. Like, no, she didn't mean it in hedonism. Like, she was a person with values and a really good person. And having a good time to her meant a lot of different things. I said, so what if you're not having a good time? What if you're convinced that you're not going to have a good time for the next who knows how long? What if it's 1939 and you're in Dachau and you've been there for 3 years? And you just heard that they conquered Poland. Like, it doesn't look like you're getting... So at a certain point you say, then what's the point? And you kill yourself. Can you say such a person is wrong? In their Weltanschauung, from their perspective, that makes a lot of sense. It's just sad to somebody who thinks differently.
So is it someone says, I don't think I have any purpose, and I don't think there's any truth in life, and I don't think there's something really happy, or that happiness is the goal. So you said, then kill yourself?
No. No, but why is it? One second. Why is it when you look, for example, at the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, why is it that in order for a person to climb out of that hole, they need to connect to a higher purpose? Because if you don't have a higher purpose, if you don't have... Now, they didn't want to make their program dependent on being, you know, sort of monotheistic and religious, because they wanted to reach a much wider audience, which is a tremendous chesed that they found a way to do that. But the people who created that program, I forget the guy's name, was a Christian. And he came to the conclusion in his journey that unless you connect to God or some higher power, some purpose, then you won't climb out of your hole. So I would say to such a person, right, since I believe that you're created in the image of Hashem, and this is not how I would say it, and I do believe there's purpose, before you let go, let's see if you can connect to a higher purpose. Because if you connect to a higher purpose, if you find that you have purpose in this world and you have meaning in this world, then you'll live a different life. And I think it's worth that struggle to attempt to climb out of that hole, because then you'll live an incredible life, like I do. Whether a person's willing to fight that battle, you can't give them that ratzon. You can share with them the possibility, and not everybody makes it. Some people do not climb out of their hole. I told you, I have a student, he OD'd. It was a heartbreaking experience for me. Not everybody can get there. Yeah?
I mean, well, you just said about Alcoholics Anonymous, but it seems you're just filling a void that was filled by alcohol, and now you're filling it with something else.
No.
We consider more healthy.
Okay, yeah. Absolutely. What's wrong with that?
No, I'm not saying something's wrong with that. I'm just saying, why do you even have to fill that? It doesn't necessarily have to be filled by God. It could be filled by something else.
Some people succeed in filling it with other things. My sense is that anything else that isn't dependent on a higher purpose is in and of itself dependent. And it risks being temporary. Suppose you fill it with sports.
Bowling.
Suppose you fill it with bowling. And then one day you get sick and you can't bowl anymore. Then you're back to the same vacuum. Suppose you fill it with family. And one day your family, God forbid, dies in a car crash. Then you're back to the same void. But if you fill it with something that can never go away, so somebody here will say, well, okay, you make that up to solve the problem. Okay, that could be, right? But if you succeed in doing that, then you've created something in your life, you've brought something into your life that's independent, that
so
can't be taken away.
I've been caring for a pet blanket.
Yeah.
And just in case something bad happens to this blanket, if your blanket burns down, you have a spare blanket.
Right, okay.
That's like better than God, because it's tangible.
Replace blanket with safer Torah, and you're almost there.
And you're almost there, right, okay.
It's better than God.
It
yeah, well, but there are enough blankets that can burn, what?
What does it mean that we're created in God's image?
Oh. The best way to answer that question is to look at the Mor Nevuchim. I told you once that the Mor Nevuchim has a dictionary, we have to stop, has a dictionary of terms, and he has a whole discussion there about Tselem. The way I understand being created in Hashem's image is this halacha. Mamash this halacha. That we have the capacity, imitatio Dei, that we have the capacity to imitate God. That there is, that we have the ability to connect to God. That Hashem has given us the opportunity not just to have purpose, because everything and everyone has purpose, but to become aware of our purpose. Self-aware.
Fulfill it.
Pardon?
And fulfill it.
And try to fulfill it.
But more become aware.
Become aware and try to fulfill it. Why are those two mutually exclusive?
No, I'm saying
Right? So we'll have to get, pardon?
Oh,
well, you have to have emphasis. I think it's one comes first, and the other is, well, not for everybody. Sometimes people involve themselves in something and suddenly realize that it's bringing them fulfillment, and then when they start to search why it's bringing them fulfillment, they realize because it connects them to a higher purpose. Okay?
I mean, what if like, you recognize that everything has purpose, and you can sort of tell what this might have its purpose for or whatever, but you're just like, well, who cares?
Then that would mean to me that you're still missing that connection. Like, ask yourself an interesting question. We'll end with this. Ask yourself an interesting question. Like, why do I care? Like, me and Rav Moshe and Rav Noam and Rav Sam, we could get together in a frat over pizza, eat moderately, and we just sit and learn and have a great time. Why do we do all this? Like, what am I doing here?
Nobody would pay you to sit and eat pizza.
Oh, believe me. Baruch Hashem. We could all find what to do and be paid in much easier work. It's only because, if you think about it, it's only because if you find meaning in your life and you realize it gives you purpose, and then you meet people that you recognize are trying to find that, it's such a gift to be able to share that. That's all.
Well, I guess the difference is you would have to know, like, what the meaning of life is.
Yeah, and that's Torah for me. Yeah? Okay. Food for thought, Rabosai. Tomorrow we'll start Parakeet. Yeah, 145 LT.